This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Donald Trump is back on the economy and tariffs, and we talk about that now on Tactics. Good morning, and welcome to Tactics. You're listening to us on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com, 860-1440. As always, that is the number if you want to be a part of the program, you want to call in, you want to have a conversation, or you want to ask a question, however you want to do it, you can do that, 860-1440. You also have made available to you. You can get in touch with me on Twitter. So if you can't call in, perfectly fine. We understand that. You may not be in a situation where you can call in, and that's okay, and we make accommodations for that. So all you have to do is tweet me at Tactics Radio if you are inclined to do so. Now, a couple things that we have going on this morning, and one that I think bears a substantial amount of conversation, and I think that this is important because I hate that I didn't get to get into this, and actually, real quick before we get into our subject matter, I do want to announce that the show is only going to be 1 hour today because we have the Braves coming on. We are, of course, your home. We're Montgomery's home for the Atlanta Braves, and they have a day game today, which means they're going to be preempting my program. So, baseball, it is in season, something that I'm looking forward to. You guys know what a big Braves fan I am, and so we will be watching for that momentarily. Their broadcast is supposed to start at 10, so I'm only going to have 1 hour today, but that's okay. And we are going to pack as much into that 1 hour as humanly possible. So, on this particular issue with Donald Trump on trade. This is actually a little bit of an older clip, but it took me a while to get to it because we've just had so much going on this week. And this actually comes from the G7 summit. This was when Trump was at the G7. I just didn't get a chance to play it the other day. We ran out of time when talking about the G7, but I do think it's important because it shows, well, I don't want to overstate it, but it shows a significant shift in trade policy, if this is what the president is actually talking about, if he is actually going from this standpoint, if this is the plan, the vision going forward, then this is a stark 180-degree pivot from where the president has been before. And now, we're going to talk in a second about why I don't think that it's a complete 180, and we'll kind of observe that after we listen to it. But here's the thing. Up until now, I have literally had absolutely nothing good to talk about when it comes to Donald Trump on trade. Now, the guy's politically been a chameleon, and that's not my observation, that's not my words. Donald Trump has referred to himself as a chameleon. So this is not just me editorializing, this is what Trump himself has said about his own policies. And he's been on every side of every issue when it comes to things like abortion, when it comes to things like the spending, when it comes to Veterans Affairs. I mean, he's just been on every side of every issue, it seems. He's been in favor of government-run single-payer medicine. He's been against single-payer medicine. I mean, just you name the policy, he's taken a different stance on it. The guy changes all the time. Now, granted, since he's been president, he has been largely conservative, and he hasn't changed a whole lot since he actually took office, which I think is a very good thing. And I've given him adequate praise on because of that. But one of the exceptions to that has been trade. And this was one of the few areas where he was actually passionate and one of the few areas where he refused to change, that he was pretty set in his ways, that he was ready to essentially forego any possibility of change. And this is one of the very few times where Trump taking a hardline stand on something, he just doesn't do that very often, really, on anything, whether you're talking about guns or school choice or civil asset forfeiture or whatever else it is. He typically, his mind can be swayed pretty easily. But on trade, he was always staunch. Tariffs are good. trade wars are good. We need to be in trade wars. We need to be in tariffs, and we need to bring back essentially the policies of the 1930s when it came to trade. But here's something that's very different from what he's been saying beforehand. He's always been very consistent on being pro-protectionism, but this does not sound like the Donald Trump that we are used to when it comes to trade and protectionism. And granted, I'm still skeptical of this, because politically, Trump does change all the time, like I've already said, and because of that, it would not surprise me if he's just saying this or giving lip service to it and intends to change back immediately. I mean, keep in mind, this is the guy that in a room with mixed company Republicans and Democrats, he said, you know what, we're just going to ignore due process and we're just going to confiscate guns from people that we think maybe could potentially possibly commit a crime with them later. And Dianne Feinstein proceeded to giggle like a little schoolgirl. So, again, because the president is so easily swayed on these things, I am genuinely skeptical if this is a true shift in his policy, but goodness knows if it's not, I have nothing but good to say about the vast majority of what he's about to say here. So let's go ahead and listen. This is Donald Trump from the G7 the other day. No, it's not. That's Big and Rich. Okay, I don't know why my clip is not. Okay, here it is. This ought to be it.
I believe that you raised the idea of a tariff-free G7. Is that?
I did. That's the way it should be. No tariffs, no barriers. That's the way it should be. And no subsidies. I even said no tariffs. In other words, let's say Canada, where we have tremendous tariffs. The United States pays tremendous tariffs on dairy, as an example, 270%. Nobody knows that. We pay nothing. We don't want to pay anything. Why should we pay? We have to, ultimately, that's what you want. You want a tariff-free, you want no barriers, and you want no subsidies, because you have some cases where countries are subsidizing industries, and that's not fair. So you go tariff-free, you go barrier-free, you go subsidy-free. That's the way you learned at the Wharton School of Finance. I mean, that would be the ultimate thing. Now, whether or not that works, but I did suggest it. And people were, I guess they're going to go back to the drawing board and check it out, right? But we can't have an example where we're paying, the United States is paying 270%. Just can't have it. And when they send things into us, you don't have that. But because of the fact that the United States leaders of the past didn't do a good job on trade, and again, I'm not blaming countries, I'm blaming our people that represented our past. It's going to change. It's going to change. I mean, it's not a question of, I hope it changes. It's going to change 100%. And tariffs are going to come way down because people cannot continue to do that. We're like the piggy bank that everybody's robbing, and that ends.
Okay, so a couple things here. First of all, right after this, he does shift over to his economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, who we know just had a heart attack the day after the speech took place. Minor heart attack, and he's expected to be fine, but do keep him in your prayers. But yeah, holy cow, just listening to that. As somebody who is a advocate of free markets, an advocate of free trade, this is the best trade policy of any president of my lifetime. Now again, this is all talk that he has not actually implemented this yet, but saying that no tariffs and no subsidies, that would be the ultimate thing. Saying that that is the goal, that is what Donald Trump would like to work towards. If that's true, and I hope that it's true, goodness knows that I hope that it's true, if that is actually what Donald Trump is pushing for, then that means that Donald Trump has literally the best, at least his ideal, of what trade should be of any president of my lifetime. Keep in mind, I'm 29 years old. I was born in 1989, which means when I was born, George H.W. Bush was the president. I didn't live through Reagan. Now, you could argue that Reagan's trade policy was pretty much exactly the same, and you'd be correct in that. He was very much a free trader. He was in favor of free markets. I've yet to see anything on Reagan that would have broken from that. But if that's what Trump is actually saying and that's what he believes and that's what he's working towards, I have absolutely no problem following him there. Because you know, when it comes to trade, this has been one issue where the president and I have never seen eye to eye, and I have yet to be able to say something good about his trade policy. But what he just said, that statement, is a perfect, perfect articulation of the ideal of free trade. That everybody's barriers come down, there are no barriers to trade whatsoever, the only barrier is moving it. In other words, if you ship something from China, which this is unavoidable, this is just market forces, this has nothing to do with the government intervening. If you ship something from China over here, you're going to have to pay for the cost of shipping because it's not free to move things from one place to the other. But other than the transportation, there is no barrier to trade whatsoever, no government barriers. And so because of that, you have free trade of goods, you have people buying from some countries because of efficiency of production. In other words, because one place is better at producing something than another place. For example, some places can grow bananas and other places can't. So if you want the bananas, free trade would allow everybody to trade across the border. And if there are no government subsidies, if there are no government tariffs, that is the ideal. And that is a noble goal and one that I have no problem supporting the president on. Now, that is completely different from what Donald Trump of the past has said. In fact, he has talked about tariffs as though they're good. He has said nothing but positive things about tariffs. He said that a trade war is easy to win and that we're going to be winning and losing and that trade is essentially a zero-sum game. But if this is what he's actually working towards, I'm fine with that. And when it comes to his idea about why tariffs are there, I have no problem with the president offering tariffs as a stick. Now, if the people that are running other countries are stupid enough to believe that America putting taxes on our own people is somehow a problem to them, or and it somehow affects their economy, then they're the ones that are not all that bright. But if that's what the president has to do to get to this goal, to get to no tariffs, then I'm in favor of it. I'm not in favor of him actually implementing them. And the reason that I say that is you don't shoot off your own foot just to spite your rival. So I am not in favor of that at all. I'm not in favor of Trump actually imposing the tariffs. I'm more in favor of him just letting people believe that that is what they're going to do, if he's just going to kind of use that as a bluff in a poker game when you're playing chicken, saying that they're going to throw the tariffs up, because just like Donald Trump, they're afraid of other countries putting tariffs up. Why? I have no idea. But that is something that they are worried about. But well done, President Trump. That is a perfect articulation of what the ideal ought to be. And based on what we heard from the G7 summit, that was something that he put on the table, said, hey, why don't we just try zero tariffs? Why don't we all drop all the tariffs in all our products, all of our countries, just go straight to zero, no tariffs, no subsidies, and see how that works. And if that actually becomes the trade policy of the people at the G7 summit, you are going to see economies explode. I mean, absolutely explode. With prosperity. And I'm not just talking about here, I'm talking about in other countries as well, because free trade benefits everybody. So if that is the case, that is something that is going to be monumentally beneficial for not only us, but for other nations as well. And I hope that that is what actually happens. I'm very skeptical of it. I very much doubt that that's going to take place, because just like here in America, those other countries have their own special interests and their own industries that want their piece of the pie, that want the government to help and assist their industry at the expense of others. But, you know, we'll see. This is a goal from President Trump that I've never heard him articulate anything close to this before. But if this is really what he wants, then that's something to very much look forward to. And we're going to break this down and break down some of the differences between us and Canada and some of the other G7 countries. And we'll be taking your calls if you want to get in on this. 860-1440. We will be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We are back, and we at least did get most of that John Jay quote in. Nonetheless, let's get back on track here. I was actually going to replay that clip, but obviously that is no longer in the cards. So just to recap what President Trump was saying, and we were talking about this clip, a clip of him in the G7 summit talking about this. And for those of you who may not be able to recall, one of the things that he brought up in that clip is he was talking about how it's not fair that other countries have tariffs and other countries have subsidies. And then he also talked about America being the piggy bank that everybody robs. So this is the negative side of this, because I had nothing but good to say on the other side of this break, right before we went to a commercial. about Trump and about his this newfound trade policy, because this is a big step in the right direction. This is a big step for him, especially considering this has been like the one issue where he's been really hard to maneuver around. He's been really hard to persuade that free trade was better than tariffs. He tends to, both on Twitter and in speeches and all through the campaign trail, talked about how tariffs are a good thing, how tariffs hurt other countries when we impose them, and how their tariffs that they impose on us hurt us, which is not true at all. And he does seem to continue that sentiment here. Now, he says that his long-term goal is complete, free, and open trade, which, I mean, if that's what he's going for, I'm 100% with him on that. But unfortunately, a couple things in this speech does prove that Trump still fundamentally does not understand how trade works. And I hate to say that, but that is the case when it comes to at least this one issue. And the reason that I say that is because he talks about tariffs in such a way that they are hurting us and other countries' tariffs hurt us. Tariffs are paid for by the end consumer, not the producer or the seller nation. So, yes, what happens is when we import something, the nation there, wherever we're sending it to, says to the seller and the nation that is importing, you must pay this tax in order to sell your goods here. That does happen, but that cost does not remain with the person shipping it in. That does not remain with the producer. What they do is they pass that cost along to the customer. And so it doesn't really hurt them. And this is true when we trade with other countries. It's also true when other countries trade with us. That is consistent. That is the way that it always is. And so, for example, if we're shipping, I don't know, beef, we'll just use beef. If we're shipping beef to Canada and Canada is taxing the daylights out of it, then that doesn't hurt American beef producers. Because what is going to happen is when the beef producers show up at the border, you know, I know this doesn't actually happen in real time, but you know, run with me on this to make it a little bit easier to understand. When they show up at the border to sell their goods, they are paying, let's say, a 15 or 20% tax on their goods. But they're also selling their hamburger meat on the other side of the border for 15 to 20% more, because that's how the economy works. And so ultimately, tariffs are a sneaky way to tax your own population. And that's one of the main problems that I have with tariffs, is when Donald Trump is talking about raising the tariffs on steel and aluminum to 25%, that means that now we're paying 25% taxes on steel and aluminum here in the United States. Now, it's not exactly that, because we also produce our own steel and aluminum, and so it's somewhere in the middle. It's more like, you know, just throwing out a random number here, it's more like we're paying about 18% more for our steel and aluminum, because what that does is that allows our own domestic producers to sell at an inflated rate, because they no longer have to worry about competition from outside. They can't be undercut as easily by their outside competition, and so it makes the industry stagnant and lazy and less willing to innovate, and it sees less reason to change how it does business. It has less incentive to be competitive. And so because of that, the price of everybody's materials go up when that tariff is imposed. But eventually, where that cost comes down and who winds up paying that tax is the consumer, not the producer. And so because of that, what you see is that anytime a country does that, it winds up hurting the consumers there in the country. And to prove this, this is one of the things that Donald Trump alluded to in that clip that got so rudely interrupted by the computer crashing on me. One of the things that Donald Trump was alluding to is a 270% tax on milk in Canada. And I know what you're thinking. Holy shikes, Batman. 270% on milk and dairy? Yes, that is how much American dairy gets tariffed when it goes to Canada. Does that hurt American dairy farmers? It may kind of, but it's minimal and at best incidental. Even a ridiculous tax like that, to where you're paying almost three times the actual market value if the government were not getting involved, even a ridiculous tariff like that is not hurting American dairy farmers because they have people that they can sell to for much cheaper. And because their product is much cheaper, people in other countries like our own want to purchase it. And so it does devalue, it doesn't devalue the product itself. What it does do is that because that's one less market they have to sell in, then they can, or they can sell in competitively, then it does limit their ability to take products to the market there. But again, that impact is minimal at best. And if they do sell any product across the border, then again, it's the customer, the end customer, that's actually paying that. Then now you may be saying, no, that's not how tariffs work, Caleb. That's not going to be how it is at all. Well, to prove my point, and to prove that this really isn't hurting American dairy farmers, and it's a purely incidental impact on them, and that it's really hurting Canadian consumers, people that want to buy milk and cheese and dairy over in Canada, let's compare here. Now, keep in mind, economically speaking, Canada and the United States are not that much different, and especially, and milk is actually a really good comparison, because where is our biggest source of dairy milk? Well, used to, there were dairy farms all over the country. You'll notice now that here in Alabama, we don't have that many dairy farms. There's occasionally some, but there's just not that many, because we have consolidated where the market is most, or in the place where it is best suited because of transportation, because of advancements in technology and refrigeration. So now we can produce milk in places that are best suited to produce milk. And in that case, that would be places like Wisconsin, whose climate is very similar to Canada's because it's geographically located near there. In fact, that's why they put the tariffs up in the first place, is because that American dairy was selling very well in Canada. And as President Reagan said, if it's successful, you tax it. That's the way the government thinks. And that's exactly what Canada did. So let's compare these two. The average price, just to prove to you that it really hurts Canadian dairy consumers more than anybody else, the average price of a gallon of milk in Canada is $8.31 in Canadian dollars. Now, if you convert that to American money, that means it's approximately $6.38. $6.38 for a regular gallon of milk. Comparatively, the average price of a gallon of milk here in America, and keep in mind, this is even counting the places like California, like New York, where it's really exorbitant, the average price of a gallon of milk in the United States is $3.18. Less than half. So is the 270% tax on Canadian, on American milk in Canada, is that hurting American dairy producers? No. That is hurting the people that want to buy milk and cheese and other dairy products in Canada. They're paying almost double what we are because their stupid government has stepped in and said, we're not going to allow American dairy in here, even though it would save our people money, it would save time, we would be able to produce more, the supply would increase, therefore, you would have a normal supply and demand response in our markets. Despite all of that, the Canadian government, probably at the behest of Canadian dairy farmers, says, nope, 270% tax on American dairy. And what happens is they're shooting their own people in the foot. They're not hurting us, they're hurting themselves. And if we were to enact tariffs, and we do have tariffs, when we enact tariffs here, the exact same thing happens here. All it does is make the cost of things go up. The only person that wins in a trade war is the government because they bring in revenue. That's it. It hurts the citizen. Just like every other tax, it hurts the citizenry. And tariffs are no exception here. So there you have it. Absolute proof that tariffs hurt the people in the country, not the people outside the country or where the product is coming from. So we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about subsidies in just a second and why there's a similar problem with subsidies. All that is coming up when we come back.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
You can't be in a bad mood listening to this music. Man, I love this song. Anyway, let's get back to what we were actually talking about. Right before the break, we talked about Donald Trump saying that America is essentially the piggy bank that everybody robs because of tariffs and subsidies. That's not true. And there's a couple reasons that that's not true. Now, granted, what Donald Trump actually said in the G7 summit is a massive, massive shift in the right direction. I think that he still fundamentally misunderstands trade, and what he said actually does prove that. But if Donald Trump's stated goal is let's get to 0% tariffs, let's have free trade, no tariffs, no subsidies, that is really a libertarian, small government, constitutionalist dream. I would love to have free trade. I would love for every country in the world to just all look at each other and say, you know what, trade wars are really stupid. They fail every single time, and it only hurts our own people and our own companies. So why don't we just stop it all together? Believe me, I would be the first person to jump on board with that. And so if that's what Trump is actually moving towards, if that's what he actually likes, I'm with him on that. However, I did want to just correct some errors here. Because the idea that tariffs and subsidies actually hurt the United States when other countries impose them is simply not true. We were looking at the price of milk and dairy when it came to Canada and how it affects American dairy farmers. But subsidies are also incredibly stupid because, again, they only wind up hurting the country that is imposing them. Because I know that a lot of people don't really fully comprehend this, but let's use Canada here because Canada imports a lot of steel and a lot of timber. Now, we still produce most of what we use, but because Canada wants to compete across state lines, especially in the timber industry, what they do is they subsidize their own companies and they give their companies money directly from the government in order to undercut the price and keep prices down so that people in other markets like the United States will be willing to pay them. But here's the thing. Where do those subsidies come from? Where do they come from? Well, they come from the government. Where did the government get that money? Well, the government doesn't make anything. The government doesn't produce. Canada's government is no different from our government in that sense. And so where is that money coming from? It's coming from the citizens. It's coming from the taxpayers. And anytime the government gets involved and subsidizes something, it makes the price of that thing go down. Which is not, actually, it depends on the situation because you can also artificially inflate the price by subsidizing something depending on how it's implemented, like food stamps. You can actually increase the price of groceries by flooding the market with extra money. But in this case, if the product is actually going somewhere else, then what just happened? The product got cheaper for the people that they were sending it to. And normally when the government subsidizes something, for example, if we were to subsidize corn that was grown here in the United States, we're still paying for it. And we're actually paying for it more, we're actually paying more for it than we would if we just paid for the corn itself, because now you have the government middleman getting involved. And so regardless of whether you even buy the corn or not, you're paying for the corn now because the government is taking your money by force under penalty of law and giving it to the corn manufacturers, which means because of that middleman, you're losing some of that money. So it's more expensive than if you just bought the corn yourself. That's not true when the product is being exported, though. And the reason for that is the Canadian government is not taxing us. They're taxing their own people. So when we purchase timber or anything else that is subsidized by the Canadian government, we are getting a discounted price for a product courtesy of the Canadian taxpayer. Think about that. Canada, because its own government is so stupid when it comes to subsidies, they are taking money, and this is in great part just like in here in America because of special interest, they are taking money from their own citizens and paying at least a portion of a product that is purchased by other countries. So I say, let other countries subsidize as much as they want because it gets us cheaper stuff. And I am perfectly okay with that. If they want to voluntarily take money from their own citizens and essentially give it to us, look, that's their government's fault. That's on them. It's kind of like the when you when your teacher would say, if I miss correcting something on your paper, don't tell me about it because, look, it's my mistake. That's kind of what it is when it comes to other countries subsidizing their products, subsidizing their raw commodities. If they are going to subsidize that and give the American people a discount provided by their own taxpayers, that I'm all right with. Because if you build a house here in America, you build it out of wood. Then even if you buy only American wood, a portion of that is actually being paid for by the citizens of Canada. Because if they are undercutting American lumber producers, then American lumber producers have to lower their prices to compete with them. Which means that even if you buy only American wood, if you buy yellow wood, for example, if you're buying only American wood that is produced, grown, and marketed and made all right here in Alabama, and we all just understand this pretty well because yellow wood is a big provider. The richest man in the state of Alabama is the owner of yellow wood. And so if we're just buying that, a small portion, because of the market, a small portion of that lumber is actually being subsidized by the Canadian taxpayer. And that's why it's also stupid when we subsidize industries. And I say this as a big ag guy, and you guys know how fond I am of the agriculture industry. I was an ag comm major. I was a state officer in the FFA. I'm good friends with the commissioner of agriculture. Nonetheless, when our state or our federal government subsidizes agriculture, which is unfortunately something that we subsidize quite a bit in this country, especially if they export it, we are paying, through our tax dollars, a portion of somebody else's food. And so, yes, subsidies are incredibly stupid. And yes, subsidies are unfair to the country that is implementing them, not to other countries. And that's why it's a bad idea for us to subsidize as well. And keep in mind that the idea of subsidizing companies that are falling to pieces, that is a Marxist idea. And in America, that was first proposed by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Needless to say, that didn't work out too well. But nonetheless, you can easily see here that tariffs and subsidies really only hurt the country that implements them, not the country that is trading with them. Nonetheless, I really do hope that this is really where President Trump wants to go, and I will enthusiastically follow him if that is the case. And I hope for our sake that... and the world's sake, that we would move to 0% tariffs, 0% subsidies, because I think most Americans are like this. Even though these other countries and people living in places like China, like Canada, like these other nations, even though they don't have our constitution, they don't have our history, we genuinely want freedom. We genuinely want economic prosperity for the rest of the world. And I'm saying this not only to the people in America, but to the people worldwide. And who knows, they may actually be listening to us at tacticsradio.com or at newsradio1440.com. The absolute best thing for you to do is to drop all your tariffs and subsidies. It will only benefit your country. Same thing here. And if we could get to a world with complete free trade where there are absolutely no barriers to trade whatsoever, which Donald Trump's actually supported and said that that's what he wants too in this statement earlier, then you're going to see an abundance of economic prosperity. And you're going to see so many people in first world countries, third world countries, rise out of poverty and squalor. Now, we've already given a lot, and poverty is starting to diminish rapidly over the past 30 years. But if you implement free trade, and people are able to exchange money for goods and services across borders without any kind of penalty or barrier, you are going to see the world economy set on fire in a good way. That's what Trump says that he wants. That's what I want. And I hope that he's being sincere on that, and I hope that his policies in the future are going to reflect that. And the first thing that he needs to do, if that's really what he wants, is get rid of these ridiculous steel and aluminum tariffs. Chaplin's Report is up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Just a quick reminder, because we are about to get into the Chaplain's Report, but we do have baseball coming up. That's right, Braves, Atlanta Braves baseball coming up, and the Braves are on a hot streak right now. Should be a really good game. But welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Got a little bit of a shorter show today because the Braves are going to be preempting me right at 10 o'clock. But don't worry, we're going to be back on tomorrow. Before we let you go, of course, as always, we're going to take time to delve into God's Word and look at the Chaplain's Report. Now, this particular passage of Scripture covers the brief amount of time between the resurrection and the day of Pentecost. And so what you see is you're going to see the resurrection of Jesus Christ on the first day of the week, and then you're going to see a 40-day period that is covered here, and then 50 days afterward is the feast at Pentecost where the first gospel sermon is preached, where the church begins. And this passage in Acts really covers that, and you have to keep in mind, Luke and Acts belong together. They're actually a sequel to one another. They're written by the same guy, they're written to the same guy, and they're a continuation of each other. And so Luke and Acts, the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, are really tied very closely together. And I actually kind of wish that if I were organizing the Bible, and it doesn't really matter because you can obviously read the book of Luke and then skip over John and look to the book of Acts, but if I were organizing the Bible, honestly, I probably would have put Luke after John. And so you would have, I know that that takes the synoptic Gospels and they're not all together in the Gospels in the order of the Bible, but I would have not actually separated Luke from Acts because they're so tightly knit together. One is a direct continuation of the other. And we know very little about the person that it's written to who we're about to look at and read about. The guy named Theophilus, who the Gospel of Luke and the Gospel and the Book of Acts are written to. And here's my theory. I think that Theophilus was a Roman official, and that the reason that Luke is penning his Gospel and also penning the Book of Acts is he is mounting a defense for the Apostle Paul, who is about to undergo a trial. And this makes sense because we know that Luke went on missionary journeys with Paul. We know that Luke was a companion of Paul. And we also know that Luke would have been one of the more educated disciples of Christ, that he would have been someone who wrote, because he is a physician, he's a doctor. And so he would have been somebody that's well-educated, somebody that could have theoretically been the person selected to mount this defense. And also, since we know so little about Theophilus, that's just kind of the theory I subscribe to. Don't have any scripture to back that up. We'll probably never know at this point since we haven't, unless we find some kind of new information, which is doubtful at this point. But we know very little about Theophilus because of that. But anyway, let's go ahead and delve into Acts 1, verses 1 through 3. The first account I composed, Theophilus, about all that Jesus began to do and teach, until the day when he was taken up to heaven, after he had by the Holy Spirit given orders to the apostles whom he had chosen. To these he had also presented himself alive after his suffering, by many convincing proofs, appearing to them over a period of 40 days, and speaking of the things concerning the kingdom of God. Okay, so again, since Acts is a continuation, Luke takes a little bit of time here to just kind of rehash what he had said in his first account that he had given to him in the Gospel of Luke. And so because of that, he puts this together and he connects the two and he talks about what Jesus has done. He's saying, and after this took place, after the gospel ends, there were many things over this period of 40 days where it takes place. You know, it's surprising, though, because we're given so little detail about what Jesus actually did in this time. And that shouldn't be surprising. The latter chapter in John actually says that if we were to write everything about Jesus' life, I suppose the books could not contain the information if the entire world could not contain the scrolls that it would take to write about Jesus, which I think makes sense. But even so, we're given so little detail about the life of Jesus as a whole. His ministry lasted 3 years, and we have 4 books on him, and some of that is repetitive. And so we have just so little information on it, and this passage in Acts kind of does the same thing. It covers 40 days, giving very minimal detail. But here's what we do know about his appearances after his death and resurrection. We know that his appearances included, he showed up before Mary Magdalene, We know that he showed up before the apostles. We know that he showed up in front of the apostles again, this time when Thomas was present. We know that there was the breakfast at the sea, which is accounted for in the Gospel of John. And we also have the account of the two disciples that are traveling, and Jesus meets them as well. And so this is just a few of the examples of what Luke is describing here, that over a long period of time, there are several people, several witnesses that see him. And notice that Luke, who is a doctor, by the way, keep that in mind, that's important, says that he presented them to him alive. And so he's very specific here. This isn't an astral projection. This isn't a vision that they're having like with Paul. This is actual Jesus, his body, his flesh, his bone, resurrected from the grave, meeting with people in person and teaching them and conversing with them and interacting with them. And so the idea that this could be some kind of hoax, or Jesus only returned in spirit, or these were hallucinations, completely debunked by this idea that there are several people over a long period of time giving accounts of Christ speaking to them personally. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.